Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This on a Wednesday is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're live in Los Angeles. It's iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me. We have Joe Thomas, the great left tackle of the Cleveland Browns, stops by today. Nick Wright, Peter Schrager stops by today. We are packed. Good prep this morning. A lot of topics. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. There's so much going on.
So much.
A lot in the NBA, too.
A lot in the NBA as well. I'll get to the Lakers in a few minutes. Let me just say this. Football is the sport we watch in America. We like a lot of things. We love football. We bet on football. We watch football. We go to football games. We're into football as a country. We really are in. The ratings are 4, 5, 6, 7 times greater than everything else out there. 4 times better than even college football, and we love that too. So when you're really emotional about something like football, like family, sometimes you need to take a deep breath, add context, add perspective, because all of us, myself certainly included, we can get too far down the hole, too into the tunnel, and not give things perspective. And I've been saying with Tom Brady, I think it's 50-50 if he stays. And this morning, I really feel like it's 80-20, 90-10 he's staying in New England. Not just because of the Instagram post he released yesterday that came out and said, listen, after a few days of reflection, I'm grateful and humbled by our team. I can't get ready to go back at it. He says, in life and football, failure's inevitable. You don't always win. I've got more to prove. So on his Instagram, Tom is acknowledging, I'm not retiring, I'm coming back. So put that to bed. I do think it's a perfect time for him, but he doesn't think it's a perfect time for him, so what I think doesn't matter. The question becomes, what does Tom do? And let me just throw this out. We do this a lot, and I'm guilty of it. I try not to be, but I think the public is really guilty of it. We always bury dynasties about a year early. Everybody wants to bury Alabama. Well, they just had the number 2 recruiting class in the country. They just landed the first or second best quarterback. And outside of Florida in the SEC next year, nobody comes close to stacking up with what they return. Alabama's going to be in the playoff next year. Right now, they and Clemson are favored. And only Florida in the SEC, I think, can match up. LSU loses a lot of people. Okay, we want to bury New England. I get it. We do this with dynasties. But let's look at New England. Let's take a deep breath now. The season's over. We love football. We get emotional. We bet it. They lose. They win. They were 12-4. They're the best coach in the league. They have the best offensive line coach in the league. Matters for quarterbacks. Their division is still below average compared to other divisions. They get their fullback, James Devlin, their kicker, Gronkowski, and their center, David Andrews, back. Those will all help scoring. N'Keal Harry's in their second year as a wide receiver. Takes a long time. Mohamed Sanu comes back probably for another year. And let's be honest, best wide receiver draft ever. What they really missed this year, they didn't miss defense. It was number 1 in the NFL. The special teams weren't a problem. That was great. What they didn't have is weapons. And it's the best wide receiver draft class ever. A.J. Green's a free agent. Amari Cooper's a free agent. Robbie Anderson of the Jets, a deep threat, is a free agent. You don't have to even bring up OBJ or AB. There's all sorts of free agent wide receivers out there. All sorts of them. And, you know, we do this. We tend to bury things before they're dead. I'll give you an example. Friends, Frasier, and Seinfeld are still the most watched thing on all these Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime subscription services. They're all fighting over Frasier. They're all fighting over Seinfeld, Hulu. They're all, you know, NBC, give us Frasier back. Give us Friends back. Give us Seinfeld. They're still all fighting over this stuff. I know it's not cool to say you watch Seinfeld. I know it's not cool to say you watch Friends. That's what people are comfortable with. So we tend to bury dynasties, and New England is still the smartest team in the AFC. They appear to be. They still have the best at several things. They get 3 key components back offensively, and I think they're fine. And this morning, here's what I know. I don't have anything in common with Tom Brady except this. I like habit. I love habit. I'm a repetitive guy. I can go to mock drafts all day, the same one. And this is what I know about Brady. Brady loves habit. He loves process. He loves repetition. That's the only thing we have in common. And let me tell you, I've moved cross-country 3 times. It disrupts that. It disrupts it. LeVar Arrington came on this show and said, man, when you move, all those little things that you love, exactly where you park and exactly the freeway you take, and it takes you 9 minutes, and you go to Pete's and get your coffee, and then it's 4 minutes from there. Brady loves that. I love that. And moving, I've done it 3 times. It's a pain in the butt. LeVar Arrington talked about that for Brady. Will he be willing to give that up?
There's so many different things that will play a part after you've been in a place for 20 years. Think about how his locker is set up. Think about who handles the small, minute details of what he eats in the morning, what he eats in the noontime, what are his snacks, how does he like his socks, what type of spikes does he like, where I sit in the meeting rooms. There are so many things just within the football aspect of it.
This morning, context, take a deep breath. Tom Brady went to Instagram, and I'm going on radio and TV. I think it's 80-20, he's a Patriot. I didn't a couple days ago. Whew, that's what football does to us. I think 80-20, he's back, and New England's very good next year. All right, let's go to this. Mike McCarthy, new coach of the Dallas Cowboys, former coach Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, and the Packers, is going to hold a press conference today after our show. It's when our show ends, it'll be right after that. About 15 minutes after that. And there was a story yesterday that one of the reasons that Jerry Jones hired Mike McCarthy is because Jerry Jones felt we played him 10 times. He went 7-3 against us, and we always thought we had better players. And that's not a bad reason to hire somebody. I mean, there's a reason that people are hiring New England GMs and New England assistants and New England coordinators. You know, Miami's like, well, if you can't beat them, join them, we'll hire Brian Flores. There's a reason Josh McDaniels and Nick Cazario, you know, in New England probably take over the Cleveland Browns. It's not a terrible reason to hire somebody. You go up against them and they beat you with less talent. Or at least the perception is you've got more talent, they've got less talent, and they keep beating you. So that I don't have a problem with that. But here's the funny thing. When Mike McCarthy, and I'm divorced, so when Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers got a divorce, people love to judge a divorce in the first month. I'm going to go to the gym and get my abs. I won the divorce. And that's not how divorces go. Are we sure Aaron Rodgers is going to win this divorce? Aaron Rodgers plays Seattle and Russell Wilson this weekend, the best road team in the league. And Mike McCarthy takes over an incredibly talented offensive roster in Dallas. He never had an offensive line like that. He never had a running back like Zeke. He never had an owner in Green Bay. He's got an aspirational-driven owner, the best offensive line he's had, the best running back he's had, and a very capable quarterback, and a team that with Jason Garrett won the division. We do this in divorces. We go to the gym. I'm going to look great. Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant. Oh, Westbrook was the man for about 6 months. MVP, triple-double. 5 years later, we roll our eyes at Westbrook. Never won a playoff series. He's a stat monster, having his worst shooting year of his career. No, I mean, he's now shooting 36%. It's the worst of his year. You roll your eyes at Westbrook. Kobe and Shaq. Shaq won that divorce. First couple of years, got a title in Miami. 5-6 years later, Kobe's got multiple titles. Kobe's winning an Oscar. Kobe's very refined. His business has never been stronger. Kobe won. Favre and the Packers. Oh, Favre. You know, a little scrappy with the Jets, but he goes to Minnesota for a couple of years, and every time they played Green Bay, they knocked the living you-know-what out of him. He gets to the NFC Championship. And then 6-7 years later, it was the right move. Aaron Rodgers won a Super Bowl, and Aaron Rodgers was really talented, and Aaron Rodgers this year won the division, and Favre's down somewhere talking about football, and Aaron's got another 5-6 years left, and he's fantastic. Be very careful about the divorce, and let's be honest about it. When McCarthy got fired, it was outdated dinosaur. This guy is, he takes over. He's an offensive coach. He never had anything like that in Green Bay. He didn't have an owner. He kept complaining to Ted Thompson, get me some players. Well, players, free agents don't want to play in Green Bay. You know where free agents do want to play? In a state with no state tax for an owner that tends to overpay Jerry Jones. That's a nice thing to have. He now has an owner who will overpay, pay early, and by the way, in a state where players love, professional athletes love Texas. They love Houston, they love Dallas, they like San Antonio, there's no state tax. Great place to go. Free agents, Dallas is always competitive. Basically, Dallas turns down players for free agency. So be very careful on this. I think the first little year, but we did look at stats yesterday. We talked about the stats of Aaron Rodgers since Mike McCarthy's left. Yards down per game, third down conversions down, second half adjustment points down. He didn't elevate. The record's better because the Bears and the Lions imploded and because they gave him a defense. But it's not like the Packers and Aaron Rodgers elevated to a new galaxy. They still only have one Super Bowl in the last decade, and Mike was part of it. And it may be their last one.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I get people, when you live in Los Angeles, and I go to the car wash or I go to the grocery store, do those kind of things. People come up, you know, I had a couple people yesterday. What are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. One of the things they ask me about is, why aren't you talking a lot about the Lakers? Well, what do you think about the Lakers? And I said, everything I needed to be confirmed about the Lakers was confirmed in like six games. Anthony Davis and LeBron and Danny Green, the three key components for postseason success, are playing beautifully together. I needed to see that. It happened fast. Anthony Davis is always dealing with nagging injuries. Would he, for the first time in his career, be willing to play through them? He has. By the way, his MRI is clean this morning. We just got note of that. Anthony Davis yesterday declined the Lakers' max extension offer. It doesn't mean anything. He's not leaving Los Angeles. It's been perfect. He's averaging 28 a game, 10 rebounds, almost three blocks, three assists. It's been terrific. He got hurt last night. He's going to travel with the team. He's fine. He is banged up a lot. His shoulder, his back, you know, he's one of those guys. The knock on him in the NBA from the people I trust, one of the smartest guys in the NBA, when he was out there talking to teams, said the knock on him in the league is for a 25, 26-year-old, he gets banged up a lot. You can't dispute that. The second thing was he doesn't love playing through injuries. Some guys do. Some guys do not. Kawhi doesn't want to. Anthony Davis didn't in New Orleans. But he has this year played through a lot of days. He didn't feel great. LeBron's pushing him. LeBron's hardening him. He's trying to create this sort of playoff metal, which nobody is healthy by the playoffs. Everybody's sore after the playoffs, except James Harden, who, I don't know, doesn't get hurt, plays every game, and just parties all night and comes back the next day and drops 44. He's an outlier. But I don't think this team was built for January. I think they were built for June. I think they're older. I do believe they need to cash in this year. Because the Clippers have more good young players, I think they'll age better. Golden State's going to have a number one pick, Steph, Clay, Draymond, and a ton of room cap space for the Greek Freak or a big free agent. So I do think this season is a cash-in season. LeBron's going to be going into, what, his 18th year. Danny Green is old, and Anthony Davis is breakable. But that is my opinion on the Lakers. Everything I needed to know for the regular season was confirmed in 2 weeks. AD and LeBron play great together. AD is, for the first time in his career, willing to play through nagging injuries. Danny Green seems to work perfectly with both. I do worry that if they trade Kyle Kuzma at the deadline, there's a lot of rumors about that. They get even older. I think they need to get a little younger so they can take some nights off in the regular season. Kuzma's value may be in the regular season, not in the postseason, where he's not going to get a lot of touches in May and June, but he needs a lot of touches now so LeBron and AD and Danny Green and older players can rest a little. But Anthony didn't sign the contract extension. It doesn't mean anything. He's traveling with the team. That means something. To me, that means he's, again, this year willing to play hurt and that was always the knock on him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
My buddy, host of First Things First via the Coward Global Satellite Network. Sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing, Nick Wright. So I said yesterday, I love the way Jeter retired and John Elway retired and Kobe, and it's one team, and you're one of the all-time greats, and it's neat, and Tony Gonzalez, you wrap a bow on it. You're still capable. Elway won a Super Bowl MVP. It would be just so neat and tidy for Tom Brady to retire. Okay, he told us last night he's not retiring. But it's funny, Nick. Football's the sport we bet. Both of us do, and you get emotional to it. And so, and a Brady's emotional. So Brady takes a deep breath, comes out with an Instagram and says, okay, further reflection, I'm going to play again. And I'm sitting there driving to work this morning, and I'm thinking, further reflection. They still have the best offensive line coach. They were 12-4. They have the best coach. They get their kicker back, their fullback back, their center back. Could I not argue, Nick, the Patriots are the best place for a guy that loves repetition, Tom Brady?
Well, I think in theory they might be, but they have he, I think, clearly would ideally like to stay in New England. I don't think that's ever changed. But New England keeps flirting with the idea that they don't want him to stay. And at some point, the disrespect becomes too much. You tried to bring in my replacement 4 or 5 years ago. I had to go above your head, Belichick, to get him shipped out of here. I then... The 3 years leading into this year, had the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history in 2016, won a league MVP in 2017 and threw for 500 in the Super Bowl, won another Super Bowl in 2018 while beating the league MVP on the road in the conference championship game in comeback fashion, and you wouldn't give me an extension. You said, nope, we're going to play it year to year, Tom. I said I want to play till I'm 45. You won't even give me an extension till I'm 43. And then this year goes as poorly as it does, and he says, sees Drew Brees as Michael Thomas and Russell Wilson as the rookie wide receiver maybe they should have drafted, and Patrick Mahomes has all these other weapons. And all of a sudden, the Los Angeles Chargers look pretty good, and you start to wonder if the Patriots, if Belichick would even fight that hard to keep him, because with or without a 43-year-old Tom Brady, the Patriot era, the Patriot dynasty is over. I feel like Belichick knows it, and I wonder if he has opened the door just enough for Brady to walk through it and become your next-door neighbor, your palatial Manhattan Beach estate.
I would love that, of course. Let me throw this out with Joe Judge. I thought it was a panic move, but let me just say this. Sean McVay, I didn't know who he was when he got hired at 30. I didn't know who John Gruden was when the Raiders gave him a job. Mike Tomlin was 34. Young guys, if you go look at many of the great coaches, they got hired in their 30s. Belichick was 38 in Cleveland and grumpy, okay? So Joe Judge is 38, and Belichick kept giving him more and more stuff to do because he spotted very early, this guy is special. Are guys like me overreacting to Joe Judge? Because yesterday I said, panic move, not qualified, other better candidates. Did I overreact yesterday?
I don't know that you overreacted. I had two reactions to the Joe Judge hire. One is, I actually like the idea of special teams coordinators getting head coaching jobs. I would prefer you have been a head coach at some point somewhere along the way, maybe a little more seasoned. But I've heard from enough players who played for John Harbaugh who said they liked the way he was able to look at the entirety of the team, not focus just on one side of the ball. And I think it actually could be an asset. And nobody, if you remove the missed field goals part of it, nobody had better special teams than the Patriots. So I'm happy for Joe Judge. He learned from Saban. He learned from Belichick. I am not here to say that is the wrong hire. But the other thread to this is one a lot of people have discussed, and it can't be ignored. In a league that is over 60% black, it is an abomination that we have three black head coaches. It is the same statistical probability if you woke up tomorrow and a quarter of the National Hockey League's coaches were black. You would say, well, that's a little curious development. But when it's white people in the majority of it, we don't have the same reaction. I'm not alleging racism. I'm not alleging a systemic issue to try to keep people out of jobs. But the league has clearly gone towards young, offensive-minded, typically innovators. Yet Eric Bieniemy continually gets passed over when the two people who had his job prior to him, Peterson and Nagy, immediately get head coaching jobs. All of a sudden, Andy Reid calling the plays isn't an issue for those guys. It is an issue for Bieniemy. Byron Leftwich helped Jameis Winston throw for over 5,000 yards. No one mentions his name. Leslie Frazier made the playoffs with Christian Ponder. Christian Ponder then has one down year. He's gone, and he's relegated to being a defensive coordinator for a damn good Buffalo Bills team, and no one brings him up. But we're going to recycle Jim Schwartz again, really? So I don't know how to solve this. I'm not going to act like I have the fix. But, and I feel badly that Joe Judge all of a sudden became the face of it. That ain't his fault.
Right.
Good for him for getting the job. But the league's got to figure out, and the teams have to figure out why they are so, they have no problem trusting black people to play for them and to be positional coaches for them. But there seems to be a very clear glass ceiling, and it's a major issue that now seems to be getting worse rather than getting better.
By the way, we agreed with you on that yesterday. There's sort of indisputable evidence that certain guys need opportunities and they're not getting them. And Schwartz is a great example, who was a disaster in Detroit, an utter disaster. And by the way, is struggling in Philadelphia to get along with the head coach. Let me segue to this. You have a relationship. Aaron Rodgers loves you. For some unknown reason, he and I do not connect. There's no symbiotic relationship there. You guys connect. Whatevs. Little jealous, not going to get into it. But I will say this. We judge divorces based on the first week. You go to the gym, you get your abs, we judge divorces. You know, Kobe, Shaq, oh, Shaq won. About 5 years later, Kobe won it. Westbrook, KD. We loved Westbrook winning all the awards. And 5 years later, Westbrook's kind of a mess in the playoffs. Let me say this. 1 year, McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers. If Aaron loses to Seattle and McCarthy takes over easily the most talented team he's ever had in Dallas, where they have an owner, they land free agents, they've got terrific young talent, he's never had a back like that. Is it possible in 3 or 4 years we're looking back and saying, maybe Aaron's difficult, and maybe McCarthy was saddled with a guy who's hard to coach, and McCarthy wins this divorce?
It's not impossible. It's not the craziest theory of yours I've heard this month, but the month is young. However, I don't think it's fair to say anyone was saddled with Aaron Rodgers. And I am very curious to see how Mike McCarthy works when all of a sudden he isn't coaching one of the two most talented quarterbacks ever. He has gone Favre to Rodgers. Like you said, you're sponsored. I just heard it, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. If you're driving nothing but S500s and then you get a really nice Acura, even if it's a good car, it doesn't quite get up the way you're used to on the highway. So I'm curious how McCarthy's offense works with Dak. As far as Aaron Rodgers, was the more important part of this. This is an incredibly critical game for him.
Yeah.
He's only had a bye 3 times in his whole career. Brady had 13 of them. He's only had 3. The first year with a bye, they were 15-1. He was league MVP, and they get annihilated by Tom Coughlin's purple face and the Giants. His next time with a bye, that is the epic comeback by the Seahawks in the NFC Championship game that some people say was the fracturing point between McCarthy and Rodgers all the way back in 2014. If they don't take advantage of not only having a bye this year, but avoiding the Saints, who might have been better than them, then you start to wonder, is Aaron Rodgers' talent going to be used as an arrow that is slung towards him, a la Wilt Chamberlain? People talk about Wilt and how dominant he was almost as a sling because he didn't win enough. So I'm not saying Rodgers got to win the Super Bowl this year, but you can't go one and done when you have a Seattle team that's been overachieving their talent level coming to Lambeau here this weekend.
You know what? I was going to ask you another question, and I don't even know. I've only got a minute left. I'll just ask you this. I'm not as high on Josh McDaniels as everybody else. I think he's Lane Kiffin in the pros. High IQ, debatable EQ. I think he can be rigid. I think he's got, and I like Lane. I text Lane all the time. I think he's a very good coach, but he's dug some holes for himself. I don't know if Josh and that ego and that impatience is going to work with Baker. I really don't. I think he's going to get the job. So just weigh in for a minute. Is he the magic elixir that solves the Browns' nightmares?
All right, I know you said we don't have a lot of time, and I apologize I got to do this. I got to once again bend over and pick up the name you just dropped. Oh, you text with Lane Kiffin all the time. Big man. Oh, sorry about that, Colin Cowherd. Now, on listen, McDaniels, I wouldn't hire a guy who reneged on the Colts the way he did. But everyone seems to be over that but me. Like, everyone seems to be like, that was ancient history. That was 24 months ago. No one cares anymore. So I've got to move past it. I do think it's possible he learned from his mistakes in Denver. And I do think what he has learned from Belichick as far as teaching the team to not allow any outside noise is exactly what the Browns need. And if, as far as the recycled head coaches who are available, to me, he would be near the top of the list. But I do have similar EQ questions as you do. And I don't know that we know those have been solved. It's just that Belichick doesn't let his assistants talk, so we don't have any exposure. No, honestly, they're not allowed. So we don't have any exposure to whether or not he has matured. And before I go, I missed your birthday Monday, so a happy belated birthday. And they always say, the question always is, what do you get the person who has everything? And so my response was nothing. And so I'll just say happy birthday, but sincerely, God.
I really appreciate your nothing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So this weekend, Lamar Jackson hosts, and the Ravens, John Harbaugh, they host the Tennessee Titans. I think Baltimore wins. I think they win it convincingly. Mike Vrabel was asked about how do you stop Lamar Jackson, and he had this funny response.
Other than try to tie his shoelaces together, I mean, not many people have had success. You know, we'll have to prepare and try to get our players as ready as possible, defend not only him, but Mark Ingram and Edwards. It's impressive what they've done.
Let me just say this. Deshaun Watson had 5 game-winning come-from-behind wins this year. He trailed more than he led this year. I think it's an amazing feat. It's harder to play quarterback when you trail. I'm not saying Deshaun's better than Lamar, but Lamar hasn't trailed a lot this year. The way to beat Baltimore, and I mean at this point, it's about all I've got, get a lead and cross your fingers. Force him to play from behind. You'll scale off, you know, they'll have to peel off some of their running plays and they become perhaps a little more predictable. Kansas City is 2-0 against Baltimore. In one of their games, they got a 23-6 lead. Baltimore had to throw. They had more success. The Chargers beat them once when they got a 12-0 lead, 20-3 at one point. They had to peel off, did the Ravens. Some of their running plays became a little more one-dimensional. Inevitably, what really makes Baltimore go is they're great at running and great at the quarterback running and great at passing and great at long ball passing. They do everything well. What you hope to do is if you get the coin flip, do not defer it. Take it. Use every trick play, every scripted play. Get a lead, cross your fingers, and hold on for dear life. They're doing so many things at a high level right now. If you could scale off, peel back some of their run options as the clock expires, late first half, force them to throw, that may help. It's not like it's a solution, but it's the only thing I can think of because they're not losing much, and I do see a little bit of a thread there, and I do think playing behind always impresses me. It's Deshaun Watson trailed more than he led this year. That's really impressive. To make the playoffs and win a playoff game with that stat, that's hard to do. I've said before, this Baltimore team really reminds me of the Carolina 2015 team. A lot of energy, veteran coach, a unique quarterback talent. The league is kind of bailing water on trying to figure out how the hell to play it. In the middle of a year, it's like, how do we stop Cam? But there's a difference here, and I got a lot of hate mail. I never bought into Cam. Doesn't mean he can't be great, but he was needy and moody and inconsistent. I didn't think he was always coachable. His mechanics got worse over time, and he wasn't very accurate. I think teams ultimately become the personality of their quarterback. New England is efficient. and hardworking. New England is resourceful. That's Brady. Brady gets every ounce out of his talent. Carolina, to me, was inconsistent. So was Cam. Lamar's different. I can see them becoming a 15-year dynasty. First of all, he's going to get hurt, everybody tells me. Well, can I see him get hurt once before you say that? He never got hurt in college. He had a sprained ankle, missed one game in college. Anthony Davis, if you tell me, Joel Embiid, you know, they get hurt a lot. All right, I've got several examples. I'd like to see Lamar get hurt before you tell me he's going to get hurt, because I don't see him getting hurt. And I've seen him get whacked about 15 times this year. But here's why I buy into Lamar, and I never bought into Cam. And everybody loved Cam's arm, and Cam's bigger and stronger and the best red zone quarterback running ever. But I never liked Cam's traits. I love Lamar's traits. His mechanics are better. Like, I didn't like his mechanics in college. Oh, they're better, and they're more consistent, and they're getting better. So he's more coachable. He's got a chip on his shoulder. Cam in college wanted to be a star. Lamar wants to win football games. Lamar's like, I mean, literally, he don't want to talk. He's not into all that stuff. He's totally into football. He's totally coachable. His mechanics are getting better. He puts himself in harm's way, but he's incredibly humble. When I look at all these quarterbacks, you guys are falling in love with arms. I'm falling in love with traits. I don't like Baker Mayfield's traits. I don't like Johnny Manziel's traits. I didn't like Jay Cutler's traits. Okay. Jameis Winston in college, stealing crab legs. I don't like your traits. Your size is fine. Like, Lamar's traits, those are dynasty traits. I'm coachable. I got a chip on my shoulder. My mechanics get better. I mean, Brady's been working on mechanics. In the offseason, he'll go down to Costa Rica with his wife. He's working on mechanics. He's obsessed with it. He's obsessed with film. Russell Wilson, not the perfect size, not the greatest arm. He has great traits. Driven, chip on his shoulder, resourceful. So it's funny. This team really does remind me of the Carolina Panthers. And I don't think it means they'll lose in the Super Bowl. I don't. I would probably give them a Super Bowl win unless they play the Niners again. And I don't know. I'll wait till I see it. But I think this thing lasts. I think it's durable. I think it's going to get better. I don't think Lamar cares about being a star. I think he wants to win games. I think he's humble. And this, to me, this Baltimore thing has 15 years on it. It feels like it's going to last a long time. I never felt that with Carolina. Never felt it. So it's exciting. I think they're going to win this weekend. I don't think there's a way to stop it. I think there's a way to force Baltimore to scale off some of their running plays if you lead late half, late third quarter. But they're fun to watch. I like watching them. And if they're the next dynasty, I'm good with it. All the things I love about football, all the traits and habits, Baltimore's got all of them. I'm totally in. Never was on Carolina. Totally am here.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
We got all sorts of stuff, and I lean on Peter Schrager. He does the Sunday show with me. He also is one of the hosts of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network via the Coward Global Satellite Network, live from New York. Peter Schrager, Fox NFL reporter. All right, this is what you do for a living. This is what I lean on you on, Joe Judge. I said I read a bunch of stuff this morning. He's verbal. He's got a presence. He blew away Gettleman. I know Belichick liked him. You did intel. I said yesterday it felt like a panic move, but you did some intel. What are you hearing on Joe Judge?
That he comes from a great pedigree and is a leader of men. I want to give some splashy hot take that this was a rushed hire or they should have gone a different direction. But after talking over the last 24 hours, Joe Judge had an incredible interview over the week and over the weekend. And then they did their research, and it's Belichick and it's Saban. And at the end of the day, Giants were looking at it and they said, okay, here are all our different options. We're meeting with all these different guys. This guy's got 5 championship rings in 10 years, and Belichick and Saban from the mountaintops were recommending him to people to take a look. And Belichick this year not only gave him that wide receivers role, but started opening him up to the media a little bit more. He was being groomed as one of these leaders of men. Now, here's the key thing, Colin. He's not an X's and O's guy.
Right.
He doesn't do, hey, third quarter, Daniel Jones, 3rd and 12. He's not McVay or Kyle Shanahan in the ear of the quarterback. He is a CEO. The key is going to be who he brings in as his offensive coordinator, who he brings in as his defensive coordinator, and also what kind of culture he's building. Because Pat Shurmur is a good offensive coach. He's also a good man. I'm told that Joe Judge, even though he's 38 years old, This is going to be a team that is going to practice hard. There will be some live tackling in practice, and there will be a new culture in New York, one that might be a little bit more tough guy than finesse offense.
Yeah, that was the knock on Shurmur. Not a ton of presence. He was a good play caller, but didn't have that, and the team couldn't get big, tough yards or make big, tough stops. Let's go to Matt Rhule. He's been a turnaround guy, a little bit more of a schematic guy than just a presence guy, although he's supposed to be a great motivational speaker. Now, I thought everything I read, he was going to be the Giants coach. Carolina snags him. Explain, please.
Yeah, this is out of a Hollywood script, and you'll love this more than anyone, Colin. So David Tepper's the owner of the Carolina Panthers. Not only was he a former minority owner of the Steelers, he's also maybe one of the richest men in the world, and he also built one of the most successful hedge funds from the ground up at what he did at Appaloosa on Wall Street. If you know Wall Street folks, they talk about Tepper as a closer, a guy who just gets things done and has a vision ahead of the game. So Tepper walks in there knowing he's going to interview Matt Rhule before the Giants, and everyone's thinking Rhule has all these connections to New York and the Giants, and Tepper basically did one of those moves where he's like, ABC, always be closing, you're not getting out of here. And what he told Matt Rhule was, I've already rebuilt the entire business side of this building over 12 months. I've cleaned up a lot there, and it's a blank slate. I want you to build from the ground up, and I'm going to give you that opportunity to do so. I will also give you all of the resources, both for you personally and for this program, that you ever will need. Tepper came in there and said, look, I used to work with the Steelers. I'm a Western Pennsylvania guy, and we had three coaches from 1970 on, Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin. That's what I want to build here, and stability is the key word. You start thinking about all the money you can make, you can build it on your ground up, and you can really build the old culture. Then you look at the Giants, and I'm not saying Rhule was weighing one or the other, but there's Mara, there's Tisch, there's Gettleman, there's Kevin Abrams, there's all this stuff. This is a blank slate in Carolina and a blank check from David Tepper. He never left his living room. He got the deal done. Amazing closing job by Tepper. Got the guy he wanted, and Matt Rhule is going to be the Carolina Panthers head coach. I'll tell you this. He's going to do his press conference, his welcoming press conference today. I think NFL fans are going to be very impressed with what they see. He's interviewed for two other jobs, the Jets and the Colts. And I've had leadership and brass from both those teams tell me he blew them away for those gigs. Matt Rhule is going to be a guy to watch, not only at the podium, but with what he builds in Carolina.
Okay, so Mike McCarthy gets the Cowboy job, stayed the night with Jerry. He had to say something that Jerry liked to hear, because I don't think any of us thought he was the lead candidate. Lincoln Riley didn't even get interviewed. So did he say something about, Jerry, Dak? I mean, what was the sauce that got McCarthy for Jerry to say, stay the night at my house, we got to meet for breakfast and talk again?
Sounds like a great situation if you're Mike McCarthy. Here's the deal. Jason Garrett was gone regardless. Jason Garrett is this Princeton academic, this erudite guy who can do it all and is really well-respected and loved in that building. If you bring in Lincoln Riley or you bring in Urban Meyer, you're basically saying, okay, guys, here's what we can offer you. Mike McCarthy came in there, and Colin, from everyone I speak to, was like, I just want to coach ball. I want to coach football, and I am focused on football. And I've taken the past year to not only look at what maybe went wrong at the end of the Green Bay era, but what I can do to get better. This guy, I talked about it on the Fox NFL kickoff show we do. They built a bunker in his house. He would have Frank Signetti Jr., and he would have Jim Haslett come over. And on Mondays, they would watch the entire league, not just the broadcast copy. They'd go through the All-22 and watch all of these different teams and use analytics. Yes, analytics. Mike McCarthy, who's this Western Pennsylvania former toll booth guy, would come in and say, let's look at the analytics. Let's embrace it. He sold this to Jerry Jones and said, basically, I just want to coach football. And I watched all these quarterbacks. There's a lot to like about Dak Prescott. I think I can get the best out of him. This was a football hire through and through. Jerry Jones is very happy with having a football guy in Mike McCarthy and also bringing in what he's going to have. And already they've hired the special teams coach from the Rams, John Fossil, who's very well respected, known as Bones, and his defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, we know is a football man as well. So this is going back to basics, Cowboys football. Let's get us back to greatness.
Okay, Cleveland's the last team. They got the pick of the litter here. I've said before, I know Josh McDaniels is smart. He's better than Freddie Kitchens. But until this owner's less impulsive and until Baker's less impulsive, I don't care who coaches. I really don't. If the owner is this impatient, it'll never work. And if Baker's this impulsive, it'll never work. So I think those two things are key. But they're going to hire somebody here, I would guess, that is offensive-minded. That's my gut with Baker. You got to save your number one pick. Or am I wrong? Is Josh McDaniel the leader in the clubhouse today?
I don't think we're going to have an answer to the Browns coaching job until early next week. I'll tell you why. Josh McDaniels does an interview till Friday. And the day before him, to me, is a very interesting interview. Kevin Stefanski, a name you're not going to hear a bunch out of on every show. But Kevin Stefanski is the offensive coordinator of the Minnesota Vikings. Last year, Stefanski came in there and wowed the Browns. Absolutely blew them away using analytics, forward thinking, and spoke to Paul DePodesta, who is one of the chief strategy guys in that room, and spoke very clearly with him. John Dorsey pushed hard and got Freddie Kitchens the job. Well, DePodesta really liked Stefanski. He's going to meet Thursday. McDaniels on Friday. Little note on McDaniels. The year that Baker was the number one overall pick, there was a lot of talk about how much the Patriots brass liked Baker Mayfield. And knowing that Brady's days might be done at some point, do we move up in the draft and try to take a swing at Baker if he slips? He didn't slip. But when you think offense in New England, Josh McDaniels was one of those guys. And if he was interested in Baker Mayfield then, I'm sure he's interested now. Two more names really quickly. Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator, very impressive out of San Francisco. He's a name you're hearing. And Jim Schwartz is interviewing with the Cleveland Browns today. He's got history with the Browns. Also a guy. Defense, all business, no joking around. Let's be the best and most disciplined team on Sunday. That might work more than the loudest team all offseason.
By the way, I said this earlier. I got a lot of heat. I think the Ravens remind me a lot of the Carolina Panthers in 2015, where there's this unique quarterback, the league's bailing water on how to face him. They've got a ton of energy, a lot of young players and a belief system. They're playing at home, and I think Baltimore is a really special team. I don't think you can stop Lamar. I think you can, you know, hopefully get ahead on him, force him to maybe run less. But I'll tell you, I never bought into Carolina and Cam because I didn't like Cam's habits. I thought he was sometimes unfocused. I didn't like his mechanics. I thought he was hard to coach. I didn't think he was always humble. And frankly, even in his MVP year, he completed 59% of his throws. Lamar's a better thrower, deep, intermediate, short. I think he's humble. I think he's all about football. I think the next dynasty could be staring us right in the face in Baltimore, and I'm all in on it. I like it. What do people around the league say to you about Lamar and the Ravens going forward?
How this team is so unique in that they were the outliers this year and they were completely zigging when everyone was zagging. You know, over the offseason, they built an offense around Lamar Jackson's talents. Now, Cam Newton was in that Mike Shula offense. He got a lot of draw plays. He did some things with his legs. This team, they run with a fullback and three tight ends in their core offense. Sometimes they put six offensive linemen out. So everything Lamar's doing, a lot of that is just how great Lamar is in the open field and how well he can pass. The other part of it is they built a team and an offense around his skill set. You will never see a team block like they block for Lamar Jackson in Baltimore. Watch it on Saturday night. A lot of times, Andrews, Boyle, and Hayden Hurst are all in the field at the same time, and a lot of times they're blocking for him, and they've got a fullback in Patrick Ricard. Not a lot of these teams use fullbacks. They use the fullback. He's out there just about every play, number 42. He blocks for Lamar Jackson. So it's not just Lamar. It's a philosophy, it's a culture, and a team that completely bought in to what they're doing in 2020 and beyond. I love this. I think Lamar Jackson's here to stay, and guess what? If no one's been able to hit him and knock him down in 17 weeks, I don't see it happening in the playoffs either.
Yeah, never got hurt at Louisville either. Missed one game because of sprained ankle. I sprained my ankle walking to the set this morning, so you